let's learn Perek Zayin. He b'shnas arba lida yovish. Okay, mazel tov, Mechol, a very beautiful Shabbos Shebrachas. Chosn Kala, very, very nice. Mazel tov. Oh,
mazel tov. Who got married?
His granddaughter, Elisheva Margolis. Elisheva to Yitzchak Leshkowitz. Is that correct? Leshkowitz? Okay. Perek Zayin, we're starting today a new Perek. Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, Ahibishnas Arba Lidor Yovesh Hamelech. The fourth year of Daryovesh Hamelech Parsi. Remember, there's a Melech Daryovesh Hamodi and a Melech Parsi. We once discussed the relationship between the two. We can't go through that now again, but there is no question about it that it's not a coincidence that this person was named Daryovesh. We'll just run through the Rashi Prokim. We have to remember that Achashverosh, this was the son of Achashverosh. And supposedly this was Esther Hamalka's son. Esther Hamalka, you want to learn pshat, that Esther Hamalka had a child together with Achashverosh, whose name was Daryovesh. And being that Achashverosh was the Melech of Paras, he's called Daryovesh HaParsi, not to be confused with Daryovesh HaModi. Who was Daryovesh HaModi? He was the father-in-law of Koresh. And he was the one who conquered the Elam, the city of Elam, which was the capital of Bavel. Bavel's capital was located in Elam, and along came Daryovesh HaModi. And after 70 years from the establishment of the Malchus of Bavel, Modai, together with Paras, they conquered, mainly Modai, they conquered and overthrew the Malchus of Bavel. And who was the king at that moment in time? Belshazzar. Belshazzar, who was the grandson of, let's assume, he was more than the grandson, he was really like the great-great-grandson, but everyone says he was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar. There were three main powers in the Malchus of Bavel. There was Nebuchadnezzar, and then there was Evel Merodach, and Evel Merodach had a son or a grandson, Belshazzar. Belshazzar had a daughter, Vashti. So Vashti is a carryover from the Malchus of Bavel. What did Bavel accomplish? Bavel's fame in this world is they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. Achashverosh was obsessed with not rebuilding the Beis HaMikdash. Ad Chatzi HaMalchus. V'sinasin loch. Esther, you can have whatever you want, but there's one thing you will not get. I will not allow the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. Why is that so? Why? Why was Achashverosh obsessed not to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash? It was his way of saying to Esther, I remember my previous wife. That's what it's all about. He lived, Achashverosh was haunted his entire life. That's the beginning of the Megillah. The beginning of the Megillah, we just gloss over it. Achashverosh had a quarrel, had a fight with his wife. So he went to the Shalom Bayis master of the world. His name was Haman Memuchan. He was the big mumcha on Shalom Bayis, and he gave him bad advice. He says, "Kill your wife." That was the advice he gave. That was the marriage counselor. The big marriage counselor of the day was Memuchan, and he advised, Achashverosh, just get rid of her. Why? He was Nogea Bedavar. Haman had a daughter, and he wanted Achashverosh to marry his own daughter, Haman's daughter, so that he would now become, the Malchus would eventually go to him. That did not work out. He did not like Haman's daughter, but he did take his advice to execute Vashti. That was a big mistake. And that error haunted Achashverosh for the rest of his life. How do you know it haunted Achashverosh the rest of his life? How do you know that? What's the proof, the greatest proof? He named his own son Daryovesh. He named his own son after the person from whom Esther, from whom Vashti came. Vashti was not in that angle. Vashti was the great granddaughter of Bavel, of Nebuchadnezzar, and Daryovesh Hamadi was the one, Daryavish Hamadi was the one who conquered, who succeeded the Malchus of Bavel. And wait, I'm getting a little bit confused now. I don't remember all the details now. Okay, but let's just keep that in mind for the moment. We'll come back to me in a moment. But in the meantime, Achashverosh, he named his son. This is something not to be taken lightly. He named his son after Daryavish. Now, Daryavish was basically his father-in-law's fought. Well, Achashverosh was a stable boy for Balshetzar. Let's go back. How does all this go? I'm forgetting all of the information. Who was Achashverosh? He was a stable boy for Balshetzar. Somehow Achashverosh, I don't know how, he was able to maneuver his way into the family of the Malchus. And the succession,
through fighting in the war.
He was a soldier. So somehow, I'll probably want to unmute for 1 second because there's some background noise here. Michal, you'll take off the mute on your thing. But let's go through the process. First came Daryavish Hamadi. He conquered the world power from Bavel. Then, when Daryavish died, it was given over to Daryavish's son-in-law, Koresh. Koresh was the son-in-law. Then, after Koresh died, I don't know if it was the next one in line, but Achashverosh was in the line from Koresh. Thus, when Achashverosh, but who was Achashverosh loyal to? To whom was his true loyalty? His true loyalty was to Balshetzar, because Achashverosh was a stable boy, even though Achashverosh was serving in the army and was loyal to Koresh and married into Koresh's family, the yichus of Achashverosh was Balshetzar, because he grew up in the shadow of Balshetzar. He grew up in the palace. He knew about the Malchus of Bavel. As we learn in the Megillah, where Vashti says to him, "Who do you think you are? You are nothing. You were just a stable boy." Michal, am I saying something?
Yeah, I didn't follow the part before this, but go ahead.
It says in the Megillah.
His connection to Belshazzar, I don't get it, because he was participated in the overthrow.
But it's true. Right, that's the difficult point. But what does it say?
Okay, but go on. You were saying Vashti called him
the
stable
boy of my...
I'm the nobility in this family.
The stable boy of who? Of my father, of Balshetzar. That's what it says in Rashi in the Megillah. Who do you think you are, you good for nothing? She spoke to him like a real wife talks to a husband. Who do you think you are? There are two types of men, Rabbi Isai, in this world. Don't ever forget this. There are men who wait for their wives, and then there are single men. Okay? Everything is divided into that category. So she spoke to him like a real wife. She said to him, "Who do you think you are? You're nothing. You were just a stable boy for my father, Balshetzar." How then, Michal asked a good question, how then can a person who was loyal originally to Balshetzar, who was the enemy, who was overthrown by Modai and then Paras, now become the king of Paras? Good question. I don't know. But it says explicitly in Rashi and Chazal that he was indeed the loyal. This was where he came from, the stable boy of Balshetzar. And he ended up marrying the daughter of Balshetzar, who was Vashti. So who do you think...
He married Vashti because Vashti was adopted by the Persian by
right by when they Daryavish. Came when Daryavish
so
when
that oh. That doesn't put him on her side of the fence, okay?
But when Daryavish conquered Bavel, Daryavish saw this
little girl
in the palace.
He adopted her,
and he adopted her,
and then married her off to
Achashverosh. So. Who does Vashti owe her life to? She owes her life to Daryavish. Daryavish saved her. Daryavish saved her. That's who she owes her life to.
Yes, but she still knows who she was.
But she was the daughter of Belshazzar. Achashverosh was also loyal to Belshazzar because he was a stable boy. And somehow he made his way in and he ended up marrying her. So thus, both of them together, Vashti and Belshazzar and Achashverosh, really have loyalty to the Malchus of Bavel. They're living, they're really spies, they're moles. They are moles in the Malchus of Paras. Paras came after Modai. Modai overthrew Bavel. And here, who is the king and queen? It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing irony of history. The king and the queen of Paras, who are the ones who pretty much participated in the overthrow of Bavel, are really loyal to Bavel. Because Vashti certainly is loyal to Bavel because she was the child of the last king of Bavel.
And yeah, but Rabbi Levine, there is no Bavel at this point. So there's nothing to be loyal to.
Their ideology.
She just takes pride in her royal lineage.
No, but there is one thing. There is one very important point that it's extremely critical that we understand. There is Bavel. What was Bavel's legacy? Their legacy, beyond anything that they put into this world, was they destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. That is who they are. There are many psukim in Tanakh where Hashem expresses his fury, his anger, his desire to obliterate this nation for one reason only. They are the ones who destroyed my Beis HaMikdash. We have the nation of Bavel that was obliterated by Modai and by Paras. And the irony of history is that the king and the queen of Paras are two people who are loyal to Bavel, to what Bavel represents. The legacy of Bavel was to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Thus, in the Megillah, over and over again, Achashverosh makes it very clear to his new wife, "At chatzi hamalchus tinosin loch." You will not get back the Beis HaMikdash. The Beis HaMikdash will not be rebuilt under no condition. Why? Number one, I myself am loyal to my master, Belshazzar. I was his stable boy. He gave me a bonus for the holidays. He was nice to me. I'm therefore going to reciprocate. I'm going to make sure that this Beis HaMikdash will not be rebuilt because that's what he would have wanted. And number two, my wife, who was killed because of this fool, Memuchan, otherwise known as Haman, she also was loyal to her father, and she would never want the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. So you, Esther, who are coming to replace my wife, Vashti, who is a continuation of Bavel, and myself as well, who was loyal to Belshazzar, I will never let you rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And in order to make that clear to you, Esther, we're going to call your child Daryavish. Why? Because Daryavish will be a constant reminder of my wife. Every time Achashverosh would say Daryavish, who was he really saying? What was Daryavish? It's like Bigamatria Vashti. Because Daryavish was the one who saved Vashti. So, in essence, So if he had a girl, he would have called her Vashti, right? But he can't go call Vashti because since Vashti was wicked, and in the books, you know, he executed. He doesn't want to say I made a mistake. Did Trump ever say he made a mistake? His entire 4 years. Did you ever hear once Trump say Chotasi? Those words don't exist in his vocabulary. So would Achashverosh?
But being a Democrat means you never have to say you're sorry.
What? But Parshah would even also never ever fathom to say he made a mistake. In any event, that's not important. But Achashverosh couldn't call his wife call his daughter Vashti because that would say I made a mistake. I shouldn't have killed her. But in a subtle way, he did by calling his son Daryavish. In essence, he's calling his son Vashti. Why? Because who is the one to whom Vashti owes her life to Daryovish. When Daryovish entered the palace on that fateful night, when there was the handwriting on the wall that was interpreted by Doniel, Daryovish saw this little girl clinging to Belshazzar. And Daryovish murdered in cold blood her father, but had Rachmanis on this little girl and adopted her, and eventually married her off to his stable boy, Ahasuerus. So to whom does Vashti owe her life? To Daryovish. So when...
Did you say that Daryovish and Vashti have the same...
No, it was a joke. That was a joke. Don't take me seriously when I say that. I'm just trying to say they're related. Thus, when Ahasuerus named his son Daryovish, in essence, he's naming his son Vashti. Because Vashti's source, she owes her life to Daryovish HaModi. How do you think Esther felt about that? You know, Chazal say two wives, if a person has two wives, they're called tzoros in the Mishnayos. Okay, Mishnayos, Masechet Yevamos, two wives are called tzoros. Each wife is a rival with the other wife. They're fighting for the attention of their husband. So what kind of life was it for Esther that every other day Ahasuerus would say to her, Esther, you don't meet up to what Vashti was like. Vashti was better. Vashti did this. Vashti did that. Could you imagine a man is married to a second wife and he says to the second wife the whole day, you're no good. My first wife was better. She was able to do this. She did that. She did this. She kept the house better. She made better food and she dressed the children better and this and this. Could you imagine? She was smarter and this and that. Can you imagine what the second wife feels like when you go to talk like that? Well, that's exactly what Ahasuerus, she was a tyrant. That's exactly what he did to Esther Hamalka by calling her son Daryovish. Because who was Daryovish? It was the one to whom Vashti owes her life to. And what does that say to Esther? Esther, you're not getting the Beis HaMikdash, no matter what. We have to understand, Esther had the child after the story of the Megillah was over. So we think when the Megillah was over, oh, La Yehuda Ma'asa'ira Simcha V'sasim V'ikar came to Yelanu, everything is fine and good. If everything is fine and good, why then didn't Ahasuerus immediately grant permission for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt? Why was there still a delay? What's going on? We end off Purim with such a happy holiday. We're so happy. Haman has been executed, his 10 sons, who issued the sitna, the letter of accusation, that the Beis HaMikdash should not be rebuilt. So now that the miracle is over, everything should go back to the way it was, and the Beis HaMikdash should resume. They should be permitted to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And the ultimate shock is, when the story of the Megillah is over, nothing has changed. The Beis HaMikdash is still not rebuilt. There is still no permission. Permission is not granted to build the Beis HaMikdash. And guess what? It gets even worse. Because now, when the story of the Megillah is over, everyone goes back to their merry ways, Esther and Ahasuerus have a child. And Ahasuerus names the child Daryovish, which means he's naming his child basically Vashti. And who is Vashti? Vashti is a continuation of the Malchus of Bavel. And what is the Malchus of Bavel all about? One thing only, to destroy the Beis HaMikdash. So Purim is not such a happy holiday. It's not for us, for Klal Yisrael. It's not for Esther a happy holiday, and it's not for us a happy holiday, because a statement, when the holiday is over and they first have a child and they name the child Daryovish, that is a statement that there will never be a Beis HaMikdash. So what's the great celebration about Purim? And indeed, Chazal say that is why we do not recite Hallel on Purim. Akate Avdei Ahasuerus Anan. We are still the slaves of Ahasuerus. Not much has changed in the big picture of things with the story of Purim. Things even get even worse. He solidifies his intensity of Ad Chatzi HaMalchus V'Sinasein Loch. Isn't that what the whole Megillah pivots on? The whole Megillah centers on that Esther, you could have whatever you want at Chatzia Malchus. Did that ever change when the salvation came? At the end of the Megillah, when the Megillah is over, It's the same exact storyline. Ad chatzi hamalchus tinosin loch. You're still not getting the Beis HaMikdash. And to make sure you get it, I'm going to name your child Daryovesh, which was basically the father. This is the father of my previous wife, Vashti, which represents there's no Beis HaMikdash. And then finally, after he died, Achashverosh died, and he was free from his influence, and this child was now under the pure influence of Esther, 4 years into his Malchus. The irony is, Bovel said, you can rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. The very one who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash is now the one that is saying you can rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, because Daryovesh is Bovel. Why is Daryovesh Bovel? Because Daryovesh is Vashti, the one to whom Esther owes her, who Vashti owes her life to. So in essence, Daryovesh is really basically Vashti. And it is Vashti, reincarnated as a man, that is saying, I grant permission for you to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Is that not irony? If that's not irony, then what is? The greatest enemy of Hashem, Bavel, who destroyed the Beis HaMikdash, they are the ones now, in essence, are granting permission for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt.
Koresh, who gave permission to rebuild?
The first time. Koresh was the first. He's the one who gave permission, correct. But then what happened? Shortly thereafter, there was a sitna, there was a letter of accusation that was written after Koresh died. The next king, I forgot his name, wherever the king, after Koresh died, there was a letter of accusation written in Eretz Yisrael by the Democrats, by the 10 sons of Haman. Haman's 10 sons, this is all Nehemiah, Sefer Nehemiah, and they sent this letter to the king of Paras, and the king of Paras stamped it. They issued what we call today in America, in New York City, a stop order, and they hung up this stop order outside the green plywood that they put around the construction site. It is illegal by penalty of law, by fine, imprisonment, to enter into this area. No work can be done. Who was responsible for that? The 10 sons of Haman. The miracle of the Megillah is the 10 sons of Haman. Why don't we make such a big deal about the 10 sons? Who cares? The 10 sons of Haman. Chazal said he had 300 sons. Okay, 300. So why do we make a big deal about these 10 sons? It was these 10 sons that were the ones who were responsible for the stop order, not to build the Beis HaMikdash. Now they're dead. Now that they're dead, now the Mikdash can continue. But it didn't continue. Why did it not continue? Achashverosh made sure it should not, by naming his own son Daryovesh, which in essence is naming him Vashti, to remind the world that this is a continuation of the ideology of Bovel that does not allow the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. And yet 4 years later, Daryovesh HaParsi rebels against his own dead father and grants full permission for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. Okay, so there's a lot more in the Purim story than meets the eye. Okay, let's read now. And this all took place in the fourth year of Daryovesh. It was B'shnas Arbol Daryovesh HaMelech Hoya Devar Hashem. Yes, the son of Esra Malka. Yes, that's what I'm saying. The son of Esra Malka. Hoya Devar Hashem El Zichariah. Hashem spoke to Zechariah be'arbo'o l'chodesh ha-teshi'i on the fourth day of Chodesh Kislev. We had this before. On the fourth day, l'chodesh ha-teshi'i, the ninth month of the year is Kislev. Ha-teshi'i be-Kislev. Now that's a little bit interesting. Why is it necessary to say that it's Kislev when it says that it's the ninth, that it is the ninth month? We can figure this out on our own. We'll see. Vayishlach beiskel shar etzer. These are people, and he sent to beiskel. Who is the one? The Deber was sent. We'll see over here in the Mitzvahs in a few moments. look at the Mitzudos now for one moment. Return Lema Hadibur Hoya Al Ki Shalach Hakinesia Shabbava Lebes Hashem asked, why was this happening? Because they received the following message. Let's read the whole part together. Vayishlach Beiskel Shar Etzer Veregem Melech Shar Etzer Veregem Melech Vaanashav Lechalois Pnei Hashem. Okay, these people will see who they were in one moment. They sent a message to the Beis HaMikdash. Okay, what do they send? Leimor saying, El HaKoyanim Asher LeBeis HaShem Tzivokois, V'el HaNevim Leimor, HaEvke, this is a very important pasuk. HaEvke B'Chodesh HaChamishi, should we cry on Tisha B'Av, should we fast? He nozer Kasher Osisi, Ze Kamo Shonim. And the word He nozer is a great word. Nozer means, should we separate ourselves? What is a nozer? Ki nizir elokim yihyeh. Nizir means many things. It means a crown, but it also means separation. Precious. A nazir is not allowed to drink wine. A nazir is not allowed to contaminate himself to the dead. A nazir is not allowed to cut his hair. The essence of a nazir is prohibition, separation, to distance, to stay away, social distancing. He has to stay away. There's an element of distance with regard to a nazir, and that is the way the word is being used over here in reference to mourning. We're calling here, it's a very, very interesting concept to refer to the mourning for the Churban Beis
HaMikdash. Well, that's how the Torah uses it. V'yinozru mikotshei b'nei Yisrael. You have that pasuk.
But sometimes, it says, but it's also used in reference to a crown as an expression of greatness. And nazir lekim, it's also a nazir. Crown, so it goes both ways. All right, but here we're using it as the distance. This was the question that was posed. Let's learn these psukim together. Let's learn the mitzvahs, or maybe we should read a few more psukim. Yeah, let's do these two psukim. Let's just do these psukim first. Let's see the mitzvahs. David pasuk starting with pasuk aleph. In the Mitzudah Yistavid, Hoya Devar Hashem, Hu Adibu Homo Lamata, Pasuk Beis, on page 772, Perek Zayin, Vayishlach Beis, Kel, Return Loimar, Hadibu Hoya Al, Ki Sholach HaKedesia, Shebabava, Lebeis Hashem. The reason why Hashem sent this prophecy to Zechariah was in order to answer a question. In other words, a question was sent from Babel to Eretz Yisrael, and the people in Eretz Yisrael did not know the answer. So Hashem said, I will tell you the answer and send them the answer. Hashem was very kind. He sent the Nevuah to answer a she'ela, a question. And what was the question? Shar etzer v'yesreg melech v'anoshav. Hasorim l'mish matoy sheheim yichalu pnei Hashem l'ashpia ha'nevuah al ha'koyanim v'hanevim. These are the princes who l'mish matoy, that were subordinate, that they listened, they were good listeners to the words of Zechariah. Shehem yichalu pnei Hashem, they asked Zechariah, well, they sent a message to the Kohanim to make a request from Hashem, from the Nevi'im, l'hashpia hanavua al ha'kohanim ha'nevi'im, sheyimtzu, they should discover ma'aneh, a response, l'hashiv lohem al she'losam. This is a very explosive topic, because Torah generally is lav b'shamayim. That's how we paskin. Not everyone agrees to that. If you have a halachic dilemma, you have a shayla, what to do? You have a new food. What bracha do you make on the new food? Do you make a shahakol, or do you make a mezoinos? Licorice. One of the age-old questions, candy. Okay, children, they love licorice. What bracha do you make on licorice? Does anyone know what bracha you make on licorice? You're not going to get an answer. Everyone will tell you a different story. One person will tell you make a shahakol, and other people will tell you make a mezoinos. What bracha do you make on schnitzel? Do you make a shahakol, or do you make a mezoinos? You're not going to get an answer. Whoever you ask will tell you a different story. Some will tell you for licorice that since there is flour, it's an open, closed case, an open shut case in Shulchan Aruch, mezoinos prevails. You make a bari minei mezoinos. And other places say, no, The only reason why they add that flour into licorice is a binder. It's not providing any flavor, any taste. It's a binder. It's just glue. And therefore, it does not count. It does not follow what it says in Shulchan Aruch. You make a shahakol. So, you know what? Let's go ask the Urim V'Tumim. We'll go to the Kohen Gadol. He'll put on the Big Day Kohuna. And we'll ask the Urim V'Tumim, what bracha do you make on licorice? And the letters will light up. Could you do that? Well, we are told no. Torah lav bashamay. Any halacha, it's not the way it works. When it comes to halacha, the chachamim, they are yori la'imka shel halacha, and they take a vote. You have a Sanhedrin, you have a Bezdin, you take a vote, and the majority wins, and that's the end. There's no such thing. Hashem wants us to decide halachic matters. Not everyone, you should know, not everyone agrees to that principle. Some hold this, that it's very fluid in our mouths, Torah b'shamayim. Some hold, no. You can ask a shayla, and in Shemayim they can paskin, and whatever they paskin, that's halacha. In any event, here we have an example of where there, what appears at face value to ask a halachic question. That's what it appears. It's now we have a bayasheni. Should we observe Tisha B'Av during the era of the Bayis Sheni? Should we fast, say Kinois? On the one hand, there's a Beis HaMikdash. Here it is. We're bringing today the Talmid Shel Shachar, the Talmid Shel Bein Harboim. On the other hand, the Nevi'im sanctioned a fast day, for all general fast day, to mourn the loss of the Beis HaMikdash. This structure that has been erected is a skeleton relative to what the former glory of what we had. There is no Urim V'Tumim, there is no Oroin, there is no Eish Men HaShemayim, the Shechina is absent, we're under the authority of the Persians. When you walk into the Beis HaMikdash, it's like there's an American flag. Can you imagine walking into a shul where there's only an American flag, no Israeli flag? Do you ever see a shul that only has an American flag and not an Israeli flag? The shuls that have flags have both. They have an American flag and an Israeli flag. If you don't like flags, so you don't have either of the flags. You've never gone to a shul where they only have the American flag. Never happened. Right? Well, guess what? In the Beis HaMikdash, they only had the American flag. There was no Israeli flag. Because they let it be known, we're the boss. Who's the boss here? Shushan Habira, on the gate of the Beis HaMikdash was etched the emblem of Shushan Habira. It was not etched the emblem of the state of Israel. Doesn't say that. Only Shushan Habira. So this is not really what we had in mind when we wanted to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. Therefore, our halachic dilemma is when the Nevi'im sanctioned that we fast and we are obligated to mourn the Churban Beis HaMikdash, has it expired with the building of this structure? Because this structure is irrelevant because it's not what we had in mind. This appears to be a halachic question. And a halachic question is not subject to prophets. It's subject to Talmidei Chachamim to decide. So what in the world over here is going on in this pasuk? So let me give you two answers.
Nevi'im didn't decide halacha?
No, they did not. Certainly. That's the question. Oh. That's our question. We have a principle in the Gemara.
Didn't Shmuel Hanavi have a Beis Din? And didn't he?
Not from No, a prophecy. That's not what we assume. Absolutely not.
Prophecy. Well, maybe.
Torah lav Hashemayim. They were Talmidei Chachamim. They had a Beis Din.
They made
Harah. Harah misvara, for logic. They made Svara, okay. But not from prophecy. Torah lav Hashemayim. So there are two answers to this question. Answer number one is, this is not a halacha question. The question over here is not halacha. The question over here is hashkafa. The question over here is, what they're really asking is, what is the nature? We know the halacha. We know that if there's a Beis HaMikdash, then we do not fast. If there is no Beis HaMikdash, we do fast. They were coming to ask not a halachic question. They're coming to ask a hashkafic question. What exactly is this? How are we supposed to relate to the Bayis Sheni? On the one hand, listen, yeah, technically we bring korbanos, we have a place to daven, there's a mizbeach, there's Yom HaKippur, the Kohen Gadol goes lefnai v'lefnim. Yeah, we're following the script. But something doesn't add up here. This is not the real deal. The Shechin is not here. So how do we relate to this? If you will tell me, yes, this is, you may not be able to appreciate that the Shechina is here, but the Shechina really is here. It's just you may not have the tools to sense it. Okay, then we know the halacha. Then the halacha is, if you're going to tell us that this is the real deal, then yeah, of course, we're not going to fast. Then it's no longer relevant what the Nevi'im said. It expired, and now we don't fast. But if you're going to tell us that our assumption is correct, that this is not really the real thing, then we know what halacha. It's not a halachic question. It is a hashkafic question to understand the nature of what is going on. And once we will have an appreciation of what is going on, we can take over and we'll be able to naturally decide what the halacha is. That's answer number one. Answer number two is, now this is a little more controversial. This principle of Torah Lav Bashamayim began with the end of prophecy. In other words, how could you say Torah Lav Bashamayim? Let's go back to Chumash. Let's go back to Benoist Tzlofchad. Benoist Tzlofchad said, Moshe, it's not fear. Our father died. He didn't do any averos. He has no sons, only daughters. We should be denied a chelik in the land. It's not fair. It's not fair. It's not correct. So Moshe says, you know, you're right. I don't know what to tell you. Let me consult with Hashem. What do you mean? Torah lav bashamayim hi. Let Moshe Rabbeinu figure out what the halacha is. There's a principle. You don't go. It's the Gemara. The Gemara says, Torah lav bashamayim, the whole story with Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yeshua, the Meir Shir. That's one of the most popular shiurim on morningkolo.com on the sidebar. It somehow never goes away. I don't know how that thing always stays there. The Tana Shalachnai, Meir probably presses it to share the whole day 100 times. Probably had the people from Dominion voting machines help him get the counter up there. That it should be the most popular shiur, morning call. The whole Maisa where Rabbi Eliezer says, let the walls of the Beis Medrash collapse. Let this happen, let that happen. And the Rabbanan said back to him, excuse me, sir, you can do all the miracles that you want. Torah lav bashamayim. So how did Moshe Rabbeinu have the right to ask Hashem what the halacha is? And there are a few other examples in the Torah where Moshe asked the shayla halacha, the mekoshesh. What do you need to ask Hashem? Hashem gave you the Torah. You figure it out. And if you can, whatever you will deduce, you make a logical, I have an argument, have a discussion with your Sanhedrin and your Talmidim, and conclude what you believe to be the correct halacha is, and act upon it. And you're right. Whatever you decide, that is the halacha. So the answer is, as long as there was prophecy in Klal Yisrael, then the rule is Torah is in Shemayim. The principle of Torah Lav Hashamayim first comes into play with the end of prophecy. When prophecy comes to an end, then no longer is halacha the dominion of Shemayim. Even, now here's the catch, even if you will find a person that is spiritual and is able to ascend to Shemayim like Rabbi Eliezer and speak to Malachim and communicate, good for you. You may be an individual, but we're no longer living in an era of Nevuah. All of the people that we have here, so we read in the Gemara about people that went to Shemayim and they saw this. We read in the Piyutim about and the Asar Malchus, that Rabbi Shmuel, he uttered Hashem's name and he went up to Shemayim and he asked there, Me'achoya Pargoit, is it true? Is there really a gzera that we have to die? And the Malachim said, yes. So you see that there were people that were able to communicate with Shemayim. Good for them. They're not Nevi'im. That ability to communicate is something unique. It is something different, but it's not in the league of Nevuah. And when Nevuah came to an end, it is then when it was triggered, the principle of Torah Lav Bashamayim. But until the end of Nevuah, if you had a halachic question, what barucha do you make on licorice? It is fair game. It is fair to go ask a shayla from a Navi, and the Navi will say, well, let me ask the Ribbono Shel Olam what he thinks about this question. And whatever he says, that's what will be. After Nevuah came to an end, then it was given then the authority of Torah became under the control of Klal Yisrael. And this idea is very different. Why? Because it's not what we're really taught in kindergarten. In kindergarten, we're taught that when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Shemayim, holding in his hands the Luchos, there was a battle in Shemayim between the Malachim and Moshe Rabbeinu. The Malachim said, "Tenu Chaydcha Ala Shemayim, do not release the Torah to human beings, to Klal Yisrael." And all the Mefarshim is, what's the big deal? Ner le'echad, ner le'meya. You can learn a daf gemara, and the Malachi Hashareis can learn a daf gemara. What's the big deal if you release the Torah to human beings? And the answer is, as we're taught, because by releasing the Torah to human beings, they become the authority. They will decide halacha, and the Malachi Hashareis are bound to listen, or obligated to listen to the Piskei Halacha of human beings. Now that is a contradiction to what I just told you, because I just told you that that transfer of power did not occur until the end of prophecy. And it's not a contradiction, because it's all part of the process. When the Malachi Hashareis, when it was released from their domain, the Torah, it doesn't mean they lost control immediately. It means a process began. And that process would be a very long process until indeed they would lose control. When would be the end of their loss? The loss of their control would occur with the end of prophecy. You see, Zeh l'umazeh is when Hashem took away from us prophecy, in exchange, Hashem gave us the greatest gift. And what is that? Shlita. Dominion over Hoira, deciding halacha to the degree where in Shemayim they have to listen. The principle of Torah Laba Shemayim is extremely painful for the Malachi Hashareis in Shemayim. Whatever we say goes, they have to follow our rules.
This is the Mefarshim on the Pasuk in the Devarim, Vosim Alechem, you know, Sorei Alofim, Sorei Meos. Anoshim Chachamim V'iduim L'shifteichem. Very simply, the Mefarshim say on that pasuk, because Moshe told Bnei Yisrael, now I'm here, but I won't always be here, and I'm telling you, Nevuah will come to an end, and you have to get used to appointing Chachamim to make decisions.
Right, but that occurred
on that pasuk. That's where the Mefarshim come and discuss this pasuk like that.
But when did that happen? That happened.
Well, according to some Mefarshim, that Moshe said the Nevi'im won't have time to make definitive decisions on halacha. Get used to making a Bezdin who are not Nevi'im, because eventually you have to get used to having people make decisions. The Nevi'im don't have time for this. They have other things on their agenda that they have to deal with, and not the Nevi'im. They don't have authority, and even when they were Nevi'im, they don't have final authority. According to some Mefarshim, that's how they discuss
Okay,
in the time of Nevi'im.
Oh, no, exactly. That's exactly the point I'm trying to say. The party line is, the koyach of Torah was taken away from Shemayim, given to human beings at Matan Torah. That's the party line. The party line is when the Malachi Hashareis complained, "Tnu Choyd Chal Hashemayim, do not release the Torah because we want control." And when Moshe Rabbeinu wrestled the Luchos out of Shemayim, it meant it came with it the ability that Torah Lava Shemayim. that, okay, you can say whatever you want to go say, but there's an approach, because look at what's going on over here, what's happening over here. They're coming over here to ask a halachic shayla. Do we fast on Tisha? It's a halachic shayla. Don't ask the Navi. Figure it out yourself. Sit down with the Beis Din. You say a sorry. You bring a raya. Fight it out the whole day, the whole week, the whole year. And at the end of the day, you take a vote. And that's the end. Like everything else in life, you take a vote and that's the end. And whatever you paskin in Shemayim, they have to follow. And they'll punish and reward in Shemayim based upon the Piskei Halacha of Basar V'dam. When did that start? In kindergarten, they tell us it started at the moment of Matan Torah. But that's a very simplistic approach. In a more sophisticated approach, in Matan Torah, the process began. Rabbi Maievsky just mentioned the pasuk, which alludes to this. It's a process. When was the process complete? With the end of prophecy. Why is this important? Because it's very, very common when you learn these type of parshim, they're going to tell you, in life there are always trade-offs. What was the trade-off for the loss of prophecy? Hashem doesn't just take away. When Hashem takes away, He gives. What did Hashem give us? The trade-off was He gave us the ability to deal with the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah by removing it. That was the price. The common idea you will always hear over and over again is when HaKadosh Baruch Hu, when the Anshei Knesset HaGadol saw that Klal Yisrael can no longer survive the Yetzer Hara to worship idols, and they were mispalel that Hashem should remove this Yetzer Hara, and Hashem accepted their request. He sent down a piskam in Hashemayim with the words MS. There was a very painful trade-off. Okay, you no longer have a Yetzer Hara for Avodah Zarah, but there's a price to pay. And the price to pay is that red phone that you have in shul on the bima, just in case, you know, the davening is not going so well, and you need a direct line to speak to Hashem through a prophet, no more. Disconnected. Service unavailable. No more prophets. That was the price to pay for the removal of the Yetzer Hara of Avodah Zarah. But there's another dimension to that. That's painful. We no longer are going to have the Yetzer Hara, so you're taking away Nevuah. But Hashem is giving us a gift to compensate for the absence of the prophets by now giving human beings the ability to mold and decide the direction of the Torah. Torah laba shamayim. So there's another major piece to this transition moment. We're going through now this Tkufa Navi, a great upheaval, one of the greatest changes in the history of the world. The Yetzer Hara, Avodah Zarah, no more. What are all these? Like all these, I remember when I was in college. We take a core course. They talk about idols. They show Marcolis. And like the people there in the class, he's going, they look at these pictures of these ancient people worshiping idols. It's so bizarre. What did they see in these stone and wood and these crazy things to bow down to them, to worship them? It's like morons. What kind of crazy lives do they live, these people? We have no clue. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this era, took away the Yetzer Hara. Avodah Zarah. But at the same time, there was a price to pay. Prophecy came to an end. And that was very painful. But now we're learning to compensate for that pain. Hashem gave the world the ultimate, ultimate gift. Torah is now yours. You sit in the driver's seat. You make halachic decisions. when Moshe Rabbeinu did not know what to do with the Bnei Slavchad, he had to ask Hashem what to do? You don't need to ask Hashem anymore. When you'll have the same type of question, the same type of scenario, a major, major halachic question, major, major issue, you don't have to ask me. You decide. You think about it. You can say a svara like this and a svara like that, and you can compare this to that, compare this to that, and there are some basic guidelines and rules that you have to work with, and obviously not everyone's going to agree. So there are 70 zikanim who work their way up in the hierarchy of the court system, and they'll take a vote, and that will be the halacha. And whatever you decide, Hashem says, I'm very happy with. I go along with. And there will be consequences as to how we continue to go forward based upon your decision how to learn halacha. That's an awesome gift. And that gift was given as a compensation for the absence of prophets. Because until as long as there was a prophet, if you have a shaila, if you make a bari nefashos or an alamichya, or if you make a shahakol or a mezoinos, or anything you can possibly imagine, dam mida, is this dam, tame, is this dam tar? You have a shaila, a shmita shaila, a shaila chashaba shaila. Are you allowed to make mashed potatoes on Shabbos? Are you not allowed to make mashed potatoes on Shabbos? Is it Dosh? Is it Lisha? You go to the prophet, and the prophet will ask Hashem, and whatever Hashem says goes. Now it's yours. And that's why here in this question, which is very surprising, they're coming to ask, do we fast on Tisha B'Av? We don't fast on Tisha B'Av. Since when do you go to the Navi to ask him a Shaila? What are you going to the Navi to ask him a Shaila? No. There's a Navi. If there's a Navi, that's who you ask the Shaila to. You don't ask a Shaila to a Talmud Chacham. Talmud Chacham just memorizes all the halachas. He doesn't make decisions.
How do we connect the loss of the Yetzirah with the loss of the prophecy?
Mordechai says, how do you connect the loss of the Yetzirah with the loss of prophecy? That's an old established principle that's written up over and over, every Mepharish. They go together. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu took away prophecy, there always has to be a balance of bechira, free will. So when a person, if we do not have a desire to worship idols, but have prophets, it's too easy. There is no free will. If there's a prophet speaking in the name of Hashem, and it's very super duper obvious Hashem is speaking to us, and there's nothing pulling us in the other direction to worship idols, that's not the purpose of this world. The purpose of this world is to have free will, to be right smack in the middle, the point of Bechira. Okay, let's finish up with the mitzvahs. We'll finish up the mitzvahs list, and we very quickly want to run through this. Pasik Gimel. Leimar, it's an Leimar Shu, Yoimar Elokoyanim Hame Sham Shibbe Sashem El Nevim, Behem Chagetzchai Vimalachi, Veleman Yoimu Shem Hateshuva Al Shelosam, to answer the halachic question. And what is the halachic question? Ha'evke. I'm reading from the Mesudas Pasik Gimel, written in Leimar, Vashaelichi Hoim, Evke Me'ata Bachodesh Hamishi, who Tisha Be'ov, the fifth month of the year, Vahu Adin Kol Arbat Semes. The same thing applies to the Ilefort Tzomos. We have a tradition that when the Nevi'im, they sanctioned four fast days. Chodesh HaRevi, HaChamishi, HaShevi, VeHaAsiri. They fasted the night before. On Shiva Asa B'Talmos, they fasted at night, like Tisha B'Av. On Tzom Gedalia, there was a whole discussion, Tzom Gedalia, Asar B'Teves. That's a whole dilemma. We discussed it last week. And the Vehu Adin Kol Arba Tzomos, VeOchazu, He says something very, this is a very, very important point that the Mitzudas Tavin makes. And this has ramifications. If the question was about all four fast days, why then is the question only being posed regarding Tisha B'Av? It's the same question. Are you obligated to fast on Shavuos B'Tammuz? Are you obligated to fast on Aser B'Teves? Are you obligated to fast on Tzom Gedalia? Why do they only ask Tisha B'Av? So the Mitzudos David says an explosive answer, which has major nafgamina lehalacha. It's the most chomor. What do you mean it's the most chomor? Didn't we learn last week that Aser B'Teves is the most chomor? It's Aschalto de Poranusa. It's the beginning. If Aser B'Teves would fall out on Shabbos, we would fast on Shabbos. But if Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos, we push it off. Well, obviously, not so simple. Not so simple. When we say that it's the most chomor, it doesn't mean it's the most chomor. It has a dimension that is more chomor, but does not mean it is the most chomor. In the big picture of things, let's not get confused. Tisha B'Av, when the day is over, is the most chomor. Asar B'Teves has an element. There's something about it that is more chomer, but that does not make it overall more chomer. Life is complicated. Okay, and l'may nafkamina, because the nafkamina is that today, halacha l'maysa, we don't fast. That's really the halacha l'maysa. This is going to be the whole halacha, the whole discussion will be go through the halacha, and when we see the Mamari Chazal is going to go through the mamash, the halacha is very complicated. What the halacha, bottom line is, it depends. V'tshas ha-shmad, it's ha-shalom. The answer to this question is very, very complex. But basically, as far as we're concerned, more or less, bizman hazeh, we don't fast. Even today, in the time of the Bayesh, even today after Churban Bayesheni, once it came to an end, once there was a Beis HaMikdash, a Bayesheni, the halacha of the prophets, is, as Rav Michal says, no longer relevant. It's over, it expired. They made a halacha, but the halacha was only until the building of the Bayis Sheni. So why then do we fast today on these four fast days? Custom, nothing more than just a minhag. We do not fast today on Tisha B'Av because the Navi said you must fast on Tzom Harivi. That was only during the 70 years between the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni. Once they built the Bayis Sheni, it's over. There is no longer a halachic requirement to fast. We fast today basically as just a minhag, a custom, zecher for what they did during the time of the Bayis, during these 70 years, because we find ourselves in a very similar predicament in that the Bayis Sheni has been destroyed. Now, what's the nafkamina? Yeah?
I've read that there were those in 1948 and again in 1967 who raised this question again. Of course, it died down, you know. But there were such people. They were not.
There were. You can
they
see.
They weren't left-wing people. They were just people caught up in the spirit of the times.
That's right. Rav Yosher Ber Soloveitchik. He writes about this. Okay, it's in his written works of Yosher Ber Soloveitchik about the people in 1948 who decided that it should no longer be Tisha B'Av, and he's not very happy with them. He doesn't have some very nice things to say about them. In the kinois, in the Korain kinois, where a lot of what he said and wrote is compiled. They have some sections exactly dealing with discussing exactly what he saw with his own eyes and what he said about them. You're right, exactly. But the point I wanted to make a halachic point: this that we fast bizman hazeh is no longer a halacha; it's a minhag. Therefore, that is the reason why we do not fast at night on Shavuos B'Tammuz, Aser B'Teves, and Tzom Gedalia. We do not begin to fast at night. We only fast by day. And when we fast by day, the only thing that we do by day is we do not eat and we do not drink, but we are permitted to bathe. We are permitted to listen. We're permitted to do other things that ordinarily you're not allowed to do on Yom Kippur. So why then on Tisha B'Av do we begin to fast at night? Why on Tisha B'Av do we refrain from bathing, from sicha, nilas sandal, and all the other things that go along with it? Because of this pasuk. Because since when they came to ask the question, they singled out Tisha B'Av, the Chamishi, the Tzema Chamishi, and the Mitzudas David asked the question, why only the Tzema Chamishi? They should have asked the question all of the four fast days. It's all the same. This is the most chomor. Thus, when we today don't really need to fast, and we're only doing it as a custom, we, atkan, we're not going to fast at night, we're going to go to work, we're going to bathe, you can do all of these things, but on Tisha B'Av, then it's a custom, it's not an obligation, it's very easy to get a heter to eat on Tisha B'Av. You'll be shocked how easy it is. You just have to ask for it. You have to ask to get a heter to eat on Tisha B'Av. It's not chomor. You can, if there's a need, you don't have to fit. Tish on Yom Kippur, you can stand on your head. No rabbi is going to give you a permission to eat on Yom Kippur, no matter what you say to the rabbi. You're not going to get a heter for Yom Kippur. Any Orthodox rabbi will not give you a heter unless you really have a real health issue. Otherwise, they're going to tell you pachos mikashir. They're going to give you all of these things what to do. They're not going to go, oh yeah, go, no problem, go eat. But on Tisha B'Av, you don't want to fast, don't fast. Fine with me. It's okay. It's only a custom. But even though it's only a custom, being that it's the most chomor, that's why we start at night. And that's why we don't do all of the inuyim. The same way they pose the question only on Tisha B'Av, that's why when we observe the custom, we observe it only on Tisha B'Av. Let's finish up over here. To separate from eating and drinking from enjoyment, once the Bayis Sheni has now been built, shall we mourn? Shall we continue to mourn? Why are they asking the Shaila? Because, like I told you in the beginning, something does not add up. This is not what we had in mind. The Bayis Sheni was a skeleton relative to what they remember. From the Bayis Rishon, Cotton Beinim Al Kihoyu Adayim Mishubadim Leparas, mainly because they were still servants. The American flag was flying in front of the entrance to the Bayis Sheni. This something doesn't add up over here. That was their question. But everything we discussed about this, and Yeruv Hashem will continue this tomorrow. We'll take a virtual break, and afterwards I want to continue some more halachas of Shabbos from this wonderful sefer that I have from Rabbi Stern, and we'll talk about cholent, saving a burning cholent, taking a cholent out of Gehenna on Shabbos, and then talk about some other food preparation. Lush kneading and grinding, how they relate to preparing egg salad and tuna fish and other different things in the kitchen. So yes, this sefer, I highly recommend everyone get the sefer and read it 20 times back and forth, because it's just fantastic. It's a fantastic sefer. It's very clear. Everything is very, very clear. Okay, we'll be back in a few moments.
Good morning, everybody.
Mark, welcome back.
Good morning.
Shalom Aleichem.
He's almost back a week.